Remember the passion you felt doing that particular thing you always loved to do when you were a kid? Whether it was to laugh or to love or to explore, to play or create. Those passions weren't just you being a kid. They were gifts of clarity. They're the desires of your heart authentically expressed. Hi, I'm Courtney Cole, and this is the Love Freak Podcast, where we remember who we really are and what we've come to this planet to create. It's here we make a choice, love or fear. It's here we choose to vibrationally realign ourselves with the truth of our essence, love, 528 hertz, the love frequency, which therefore allows us to realign with conscious healing, authenticity, and creativity. Don't freak out. This is your true nature.
Hey, all you freaks. Welcome back to the Love Freak Podcast. I am Courtney Cole. And last week, I introduced you to my friend Wes Geer, and he is an incredible guitarist, songwriter, and producer. And I told you about him and how he was the founding member of the Jive Records band Head PE. And later on, he joined the legendary band Korn and traveled the world with them for a few years, playing for crowds of like 80,000 people, which is so legit. But Wes's story hasn't happened without a lot of struggle and trials. For many years, he suffered from mental health issues and suffered a very strong addiction that landed him in rehab. But after years of healing and sobriety and as a way to give back, in 2012, he founded an organization called Rock to Recovery. And they work with veterans and teenagers and people overcoming addiction, eating disorders, and other mental health issues, helping them to heal through the power of music. And I met Wes probably about a year and a half ago, back in Venice Beach, California. And we had a really, really cool conversation about energy, frequency, and healing, and music. And I loved that conversation so much. And because we covered so many different topics, I decided to split the interview up into two segments. And this is week two of that. Last week, we covered a lot of Wes's story and some of his healing process. And this week, we are going to talk about boundaries. We're going to talk about spirituality in terms of music and frequency and more on his self-realization and healing journey. So the conversation continues. Here we are, picking up with my friend Wes Geer. I'm really impressed by you in a lot of ways, but one of those is just the fact that you are able to kind of go through with your healing process. Like my dad, and I'm going to be vulnerable here for a second. My dad has struggled with addiction, and it's been a really, really hard journey for me on this end, watching it and then building a foundation a bit on what all that entailed, you know, everything that you've kind of mentioned. And I have tried to encourage the healing and the process and the 12 steps for a long, long time, and it just never has happened. It takes
for him?
It takes so much for a person to be able to step into their healing and to be, you know, have that strength to look at all of that stuff. And so I'm curious for you, like, where did that strength come from? Whether, I mean, any of us have addiction or are kind of stuck in our healing process or in denial of our healing process and need that self-awareness, how do we kind of step into that healing and unplug from one channel and into a new channel, find that strength to do that?
Well, that is the age-old question. You know, in recovery, you wonder why some people get it and some people don't.
Yeah.
And I don't mean get it on an intellectual level. There's something that I can't take credit for because I'm just guess I was lucky to be wired this way. Like, my bottom was having a couple grand left. I was out of my band and I had been working with my brother for a few years, which is a great job, but I was miserable. Just didn't feel like the right place for me. I didn't know where to go. No education. I fell back in addiction. really bad. I got into meth and heroin after head. So I had an emotional time and went back, and my addiction got worse than it had ever gotten. And so for me, it was my brother firing me and going, dude, you're on your own. And me looking at my life and thinking, well, I can't just go make some band and I'm going to be homeless. I have a couple grand. And even then I was like, maybe I'll go to Thailand and ride some elephants. And then I was like,
that sounds fun.
Yeah. But that's what I wanted to do. But then it's like, dude, go to rehab as people have suggested. And so for me, it was like knowing there was nowhere else to go and I was done trying it my way. And that's really what it is, I think, is like people don't give up on their way and they think they'll figure it out. And they say, you know, many will follow this through the gates of insanity or death. Because think about it, it's one thing to shoot heroin and have fentanyl and OD. You could do that on your first time doing heroin. With drinking, to die from drinking, you got to drink a lot for a long time in most cases. Like it's death by a thousand cuts. And people will drink themselves to death. You hear stories all the time where people are like, oh, they're on their deathbed. They're all orange and bloated and their liver's out to here. And they're like, oh, I'm fine. Like, no, it's like, so people are insane and they won't let go. Why some people do and some people don't, I don't know. That's the great mystery that we'll never know. And that's why it's important, like when we're around people with, you know, severe mental health issues or addiction, that we have to take care of ourselves first, because we become sick. You can become very sick, worrying and trying to help somebody who's just never going to get it. And we have to make peace with that. We can't save people. We can only say, if you ever want help, I'll be there to help you. But I'm not going to help you die. You know, so that's on your own. And sometimes letting people, you know, sometimes we kill people with kindness, you know, by enabling them. And sometimes it takes for them to start losing things to make that choice. And for me, it was like, I was going to be broke and jobless at 35 or 38, whatever years old I was. And that was scary enough for me. But as we know, a lot of people will ride it right into the streets, start pushing carts.
Yeah, you're speaking to me. It's really cool actually being on the other side and hearing you say, you know, like you can't help people, you can't save people because you make them sick. And I feel like I've done that for so many years in my life. And actually I just kind of had to make the decision just a couple weeks ago to kind of to walk away from my father. And it was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. I actually had to watch my boyfriend and my therapist have a conversation about my dad in front of me. And it was incredibly confronting and heartbreaking, but it was just like the relationship kept opening the wound because I was trying to save. I was trying to save and fix somebody. But it just kept reopening my wound and I never got the chance to kind of heal. And it was keeping me very, very sick and held back in some of my ways. So I really appreciate you sharing that. That's like amazing. And you almost made me cry. I held it in though.
Hey, let it go. You gotta feel. This tattoo I got right here.
Yes,
in Thailand, I like with one of my buddies. It says feel everything. We don't want to feel. We want to shove it down, we want to run, we want to block it, and we have to feel to heal. And then the funny thing is there's something deeper than the feeling. Like underneath the anger or underneath the sadness or the tears, there's a message there. And when we get down to what the true message is, that's when we can really get to the other side of it, you know. And sometimes there are messages, like a little kid, I had the message of like, why won't you love me? That was a message I had for a long time that was just buried underneath the pain that showed up as cockiness, you know. And so when we can feel and get down to that, that's when we can hit that next level, you know.
100%. That was actually going to be one of the other things I was going to tell you that I'm like super impressed with you by is your
vulnerability. And I feel like, you know, as a guy, I think that a lot of guys feel like they have to, they can't be vulnerable because that shows up as weakness. And I saw you post something one time on Instagram where you like, you had a tear come down your face and you're like, I cried today. And I thought that was so beautiful because I feel like you figured it out. You've figured out the most important thing you have to do to be able to kind of dig deep and find that healing.
Well, I'm getting chills now, but it's really hard for me to cry. And my you know, inner workings want to shut it down really fast. And before I posted that on Instagram, I was like, am I a complete idiot? And I was like, fuck it. You can always delete it and take a chance. And I actually got a lot of good responses, not in a narcissistic way, but where I felt like, you know, because I attached it to the message that as men, like you're saying, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Don't be a pussy. Get in there. You know, it's just like, it's always like, which I get, there's an element to that. You don't want, you know, everybody crying and whining all the time, but, right.
But you do want people healing and dealing with their stuff and getting down to the heart of like who they truly are. Like there's a balance, you know, we don't want to live in victimhood or whatever, but we do want to get down to the parts of ourselves that are like keeping us from living in that divinity, you know, and keeping us separate.
Absolutely.
From that connection. So there's a balance there, right?
Because
you can definitely choose victimhood. You can definitely choose victimhood and live in that. And that's your thing. And people do take that as their shtick, you know?
They do that all the time. Yeah. But in terms of like, you know, in this and for men, it's like, no, a tough man knows how to be vulnerable and express himself and not be afraid of that. Usually hide, I don't care. You know, hiding behind that. Well, I'm fine. Who cares? Just fuck it. That's a mask. That's bullshit. Yeah. That's not real. No. That means that you don't know how to process it, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm into
100%.
It.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I loved that post so much, but so you found healing and you kind of started getting on with your life and you joined the band Korn.
Yeah.
How freaking cool is that? You were the guitar player for Korn for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, well, it was really cool. So I got really in as part of the 12 steps, by the way, there's the 11th step, which is how they say it. Gosh, I should know. We're trying to increase our conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation, basically. Mm. So when I was given this design for living, which that's what the 12 steps is. It's not like you do it once, but you use it in your life to live. When I would get into tough places and where I didn't know, and you're like, what do I do now? Sometimes the only thing I would have is prayer and meditation. And I thought, well, if all these people are saying it's magical, let me get into it. And I've been into the law of attraction and stuff like that. So when I was out there sober, had my brother who's super successful, super smart. He's like, dude, your band head, you know, he went far, forget it. You know, you did good enough. Just have a normal life now. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm sober, normal life. All right. But I would watch shows and in my gut, I was like, I'm supposed to play still. It wasn't an ego thing. It wasn't like, I got to be back on stage to get the chicks. It was like, I couldn't even watch a show because I was like, I'm supposed to be playing. So I just started praying and meditating. I got into this awe meditation for manifestation by Wayne Dyer. You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, I love Wayne Dyer. Yeah.
And you literally and you visualize it coming out your root chakra, out your third eye. And I'm not doing this because I'm like, oh, I'm so manifestor. I just was learning about chakras at the time, but I was like desperate. Everything I've done is out of desperation to get a result, to try something different. My way isn't working. Let me try this thing. And so within 10 days of meditating and trying to manifest the gig, which I was telling the universe, I will not get in a band. I'm too old in a van. I'm too old to be in some crappy punk band. I want to play again. And I was just visualizing it. I got a text from the guys in Korn who I hadn't spoke to in years and years. Will you come play for us? And I was like, well, this manifestation shit really works.
I'll say.
So one of the things I talk about a lot in recovery, and again, recovery, when we're talking about recovery, it's not just addiction. Recovery means recovering your true self from everything that blocks you from being your true self. Could be heartbreak, could be eating, could be low self-esteem. Recovery means be your true loving self, knowing yourself for what you truly are as a beautiful, perfect, divine being. So the message my brain told me, and there's all these lies. This is the problem. We rely on this thing, and this thing is so often full of shit, has you worrying about things you don't need to worry about, makes up things that it knows, the brain doesn't know. And then we don't go, you're wrong, brain. We go, no, this is the, so my brain's like, well, you can't play music again. You're too old and you know, you're sober now. So the Korn gig came and they wanted me because I was sober.
Wow. So like, what a gift. What a gift. A cool gift to you. Yeah. After all the work you put in. Yeah.
And this is a thing. So I get chills when I tell that part, but this is a thing that's so important because anybody listening to this, anybody out there, their brain is telling them what it's going to be like, how it's going to go, and their brain's fucking wrong. And it's blocking mm-hmm. them from something in their life because the universe is conspiring in your favor. You know what I mean? So I thought I couldn't play music again. I'd never get in a band again. You can't play music sober. And I got the best gig of my life because I was sober.
I love that.
So much. I was completely wrong. And the universe showed me that. So another thing I like to get into is why meditation is so important is because we got to get out of this thing, create space. And then what I am always asking is, where do you want me? You know what I want. Show me the way. Show me the way. But I know so many pragmatic people, they're like, no, because this and that, and this is how it's going to go because of COVID and there. Therefore, I mean, look at the facts are right here. Here's the facts, the facts. Fuck the facts.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Shit changes all the time. And you only need one of them. You don't need 20 jobs. You need one job. You don't need 8 million boyfriends. You only want one person. Like, fuck all the facts and the reasons, because that's what's blocking you.
I love that. To clear it out. Just accept. Accept. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's beautiful. And I feel like probably one of those projects for you too was you created a whole foundation, the Rock to Recovery Foundation, where you're now kind of helping people recover from mental health issues, from addiction, through music. Right. I mean, what a beautiful thing that is.
Well, I'd love to say that I made millions and millions of dollars with Korn and as an effort to get back in an altruistic, movement, I created Rock Recovery, but I can't say I was that, benevolent of a creature. I basically, the Korn gig was going away and I was scared shitless. Like most of the things in my life, what am I going to do now? I just went from making some pretty good money to being jobless again. And I went back to prayer and meditation because, like I said, when I'm stuck and I don't know what to do, because what your brain can only create from what your brain knows, but your brain doesn't know everything about everything. No. It can't churn the data of every possible,
it's
what
very
if
limited.
This happens. That
very
it
limited.
It's very limited from its own experience. So I said, okay. I wanted to go into self-pity because I'm like, great, I'm an out-of-work musician who's sober. Yay, life. I wanted to get into pity again. But I was like, okay, God, I'm certainly not sent here to suffer and have a shitty life. I do not believe that. So I clearly feel like I was supposed to be a musician. I was drawn to it, and I definitely am supposed to be sober. Otherwise, I would be dead. So if I'm supposed to be a sober musician, how can I take what I am and who I am and help people and make a living? And that was the key, because that, and I was taught to me through recovery and 12-step life, is it says you can pray for yourself if others are to be helped. So the difference in this prayer that was different from anything I ever said is, show me how I can help people and make a living. So that means my whole intention was different than just like, I need a job. And that's when I came up with this idea for Rock to Recovery. And I feel like when you're trying to help people, when that's part of the equation of what you endeavor to do, which really should be in everything we do, very hard to do, but that would be the perfect place to be. That's when the universe really conspires in your favor. Right. And so I had this idea just to take music into rehab and write songs with people, because, you know, you go to rehab and you do yoga and you use crayons and draw pictures. And I didn't have scientific knowledge on music like I have now. I just was thinking, well, there's no music in a rehab. And fast forward, now I got a staff of like 15. We do 500 sessions a month with this version of, we can't call it music therapy because I don't have the degree, but it's therapeutic use of music that we do. That's a version of it that I created. And these transformations that we see happen through getting people to play music. Some people confuse rock recovery as we help musicians. No, it's the opposite. We use music to help people.
Oh and my gosh, I love it.
I go in and in an hour can take 10, 12 people who've never played an instrument in their life. We will talk, connect, write lyrics, write, perform together, and record a song at the end of the session.
Wow.
And what I've witnessed in those transformations is people coming in literally suicidal, don't want to live. They call it in recovery, they call it in treatment, like if your therapist, measures of wellness. You know, that's really how you quantify. So they go from like, fuck this, fuck life, nothing's going to be good, to like, they really truly have measures of wellness, of hope and faith and stuff like that. I've seen people be physically dope sick, which is like COVID times a million. And by the end of the session, elated, and it's been miraculous. But again, this is all my recovery, learning to ask, show me where you want me, getting into the spiritual realm, realizing my job is to be of service. How can I help other people, and getting out of the way?
Wow. And there's such a healing power in music, you know, I mean, like what a gift to be able to have that as a part of the way that you heal too. Like, I'm curious, has music helped you heal in a lot of these ways too? I mean, obviously you're doing a lot of work in the spiritual world and, you know, working on things in yourself, but has music kind of been a rock for you? It seems like it's been something that's been consistent for you this whole time.
Well, you know, the drugs and addiction will take everything away from you. And there's times when I didn't play or care, you know, the funny thing is, I like to tell a story from this angle. When I was trying to write for Head, we were doing whatever kinds of music we were doing, and like normal open chords that are like the campfire, you know, D, C, G, that everybody learns that every song's been written on. Those used to make me want to vomit because I was just like boring, because I was always trying to find something weird and dark and artsy. But then when I got so by the end of my using, I was barely playing guitar. When I got into treatment and I was so raw and stuck in a treatment center with 22 guys and just dealing with shame and guilt and all these feelings, just strumming one chord, I was like, oh my God, that's good. Because I could really feel it for like, wow, that's changing my energy. So I started writing like meditative songs and songs that were in the energy of what I wanted to feel. And I also started doing silly songs with the guys. And that's how I came with the idea of rock recovery. Well, that's when I had a little seed sown. I would do like bang, bang, dong, dicky, doom, ding, dong. And all, you know, you got 22 guys in rehab. This guy's like a gangbanger. This guy's like an old mailman guy. And this guy's a kid who hates rehab. Everybody's in their own little vibe and click.
Yeah.
But as soon as I did a silly country riff, we'd all dance and start goofing off. And I was like,
brings everybody together.
Yeah. It didn't happen when we drew crayon pictures. It didn't happen in yoga. There was this the energy was transformed like a magic wand, and that stuck with me. So your music's been with me the whole time, but it's just taken different forms.
For sure. I'll
drink some beverage.
Please do. Yeah. You have a hydro flask. I love mine. I'm obsessed with mine. I bring it with me everywhere.
This thing's like cold from 3 days ago.
It's so great. You and I, we had, we've talked a lot about frequency before when we first met, mm-hmm. and we're both Paul Selig fans, who you actually yeah. introduced me to.
Books.
You did. Oh, you cool. told me about his books. Yeah. And then I've had him on the podcast. It's been super cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's been great. But, you know, Paul kind of speaks of spirituality in musical terms, all kind of surrounding the concept of frequency. And, you know, scientifically, we know that everything is vibrating around us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even we are vibrating. And the mm-hmm. definition of frequency is the rate at which something vibrates. So mm-hmm. everything around us is vibrating at a different, you know, a different particular frequency. And when an object vibrates, it creates a sound wave too. So if everything's vibrating mm-hmm. at a particular frequency, then everything is sound. So even if we mm-hmm. can't always hear it, there are frequencies, you know, vibrating above and below our human capabilities of hearing, but everything is music. So mm-hmm. with that, I think that there's a lot of spiritual answers in music, you know, like where we choose to reside in frequency. Are we in a higher or lower octave? Are we in resonance or in tune and in harmony with like fundamental truth? I'm so curious to know kind of your beliefs on this. Yeah, I would love
you taking it right out of my head, but say, I was like, that's what I always say, but she's saying it better. Yeah.
I was looking at the keyboard the other day and I don't know. I had this moment of clarity, and this might be so woo-woo and weird, but I had been reading the Paul Selig book, Alchemy. Mm-hmm. And he talks about things kind of existing in different octaves. And so I was looking at a keyboard the other day, I actually have mine right here, and there's many different octaves. So like, if you're not a musician, what that means is like, when you look at a keyboard, there's different notes that are C, like there's a lot of different C's on that keyboard and they're the same pitch, but just kind of played different parts of the piano. So, you know, there's C1, which is super low, and then C2, which is the octave above that, and C3, which is above that, so on and so forth. And they're the exact same notes, just happening in a different octave. They're just vibrating mm-hmm. at a higher or lower frequency. And it started to make so much sense to me, because the same notes can be played in unison, but in two different octaves. So like, what if that's the same for us and where we reside in frequency? Like, I really believe that we're just these manifest beings of this higher dimensional octave. And I think that we're in connection with that higher aspect of ourselves that is divine and that is reclaimed in that space and made new in a sense. But like, what if that were true? And this is just kind of a manifestation of that.
Yes, to everything you said. That sounded very Paul Selig, all of what you're saying. And I was thinking, I get this, and I think other people, they don't really get it. But you said it right, and I've tried to make this point with so many people. You know, and I am writing a book that will be called The Vortex of Radness about this kind of stuff. But you know, our senses keep us in this false world, like, oh, there's space between me and you. And, you know, it just keeps us in the physical realm. But really, we're in a giant ocean of just frequency. That's really what we exist in. Everything's frequency. In this space between my hands is oxygen and hydrogen and all these new, you know, elements that are vibrating. It's all frequency, mm-hmm. everything. It's just one big giant ocean of frequency from the edge of the universe to the other edge of the universe. And so we take our soul, which is a energetic being, roots itself in this physical body, which again mm-hmm. is energy too, taking physical form. And science has proven that matter first comes from energy. Before it becomes matter, it comes out of an energy state and then turns into matter. And then matter can turn back into energy. But science doesn't know what dictates that. They've watched matter turn back into energy, and they don't know how it crosses over. And if you get into an atom, there's the protons and neutrons and the electrons that spin around, but the electrons will disappear and come back. They don't know where they go. They're coming back. So like, So this whole thing of the point is this whole thing of matter, which are, again, going back to what I was saying, is our eyes lie to us because we're like, there's nothing here, but there's something here. It's like, that's all a lie. This whole thing of matter and energy is just a very gray area of, you know, where does it divide from becoming matter and energy? It's very interesting. And I think that science and spirituality like are saying so much of the same stuff, and just people think it's saying different stuff. Yeah.
I totally agree.
But you know, like stuff I'll talk about in my book is like, if you know, somebody might go, oh, that's a bunch of weird stuff you're talking about. You know, I believe this or that. You're talking, okay, well, how about this? When you walk into a room, have you ever felt an energy where you're like, ooh, you can feel the vibes in there? Well, yeah, I've done that. Okay, well, what the fuck is that? Did you see the vibes? Did you smell the vibes? Did you hear the vibes? No, you felt the vibes. That's an energy. You can feel the energy of elation. So I think that we feel a lot of these energies, but we are just not used to tuning to them and accepting them and believing them. We disallow, like, we don't want to believe that stuff.
We're still sleeping away in some of those aspects, I think. I think slowly as we kind of grow in consciousness, that we're going to become more and more aware that, these things do go together. We've been feeling a lot of these things all along. Now we can actually apply them, you know, like, and make sense of them. I think that that will definitely come, but I still think that we're still kind of asleep in that area for sure.
Well, here's what I think. I think if you go back to mankind thousands and thousands of years ago, they talked about auras. They had them right. They've proven auras on fancy new scopes that the colors and the frequencies do correspond, just like they were saying all along. These people who are who could see auras, that's not clairaudient, not clairvoyant. Anyhow, they could see the auras. They've proven that. So these go back thousands and thousands of years. But here's what I'm saying is like mankind was kind of like stupid in a sense because we hadn't evolved in a lot of ways. You know, we're like enslaving and killing. But spiritually, we understood auras and frequencies and all the magic of the universe. As our intellect, this stupid thing, got smarter and smarter, and we realized we could play God over and over by doing surgeries and creating planes and computers, we forgot this stuff, the holistic, the spiritual, and all the power of that stuff in meditation. And we got too smart for our own selves. Then it came back. It's like, oh, this is new age. No, it's not new age. This is all old shit that now we're getting acquainted with and realizing those motherfuckers were right all along. And there's a great book by this gal, Barbara Brennan, who was a NASA physicist who started seeing auras. So she went into it very scientifically, and she's like, I'm a scientist. So I thought I was, you know, and she proves like, anyhow. So the point is they say we're a civilization with amnesia. And so now we're becoming more self-aware. People are going back into chakras and auras and energy work and Reiki and real, like you're talking about, people like you doing this, you know, Love Freak podcast, and we're realizing that everything we're talking about.
Oh, I know.
It's becoming commonplace.
It's so interesting. And like, you know, you can obviously, there's a lot of false information out there. I always encourage people to do their research, but also to stay super open in your spirit and in your mind about some of these new things, because I always look back about, you know, Galileo, and he was talking about how, you know, what did he say, that everything revolved around the earth. And he was saying, no, actually everything's revolving around the sun. Everything's revolving around the sun. Mm-hmm. And they're like, blasphemy. This guy is crazy and he's wacky. And he was right. And he spent how many years in jail because,
imprisoned. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was going against what the church would say and what everybody just wanted to to hold firm and hold tightly to their truth. So I'm just saying we have to stay open. We have to not get so caught up in our programmings and our conditionings and our understandings that we are not open to the, you know, consciousness expanding and growing and evolving and what is available to us that we can't see. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there and doesn't exist. So, yeah,
I love that. But Paul, in his book, he talks a lot about that different octave thing as the upper room, which is actually mm-hmm. mentioned in scripture a lot. And I had a conversation with him and he was like, I actually didn't even realize that was a scriptural like term. He was an atheist. He had no idea, but mm-hmm. it was presented to him as the upper room. And it talks about being in a higher reality and that, you know, in this alignment with the higher octave or frequency in that state, like all things are made new and reclaimed in their divinity. So, and all, everyone's divine, whether they are claiming that here in this octave, in this frequency or not, in that higher state, in that higher octave, they are. And we look at teachers like Jesus that did come, that did see everyone as divine. And that was the Christ consciousness, right? So I'm curious, like in your healing and with this spiritual perspective that you had, have you started to kind of, or how have you started to reclaim a lot of your hurt and your pain and your suffering that you've experienced in that higher frequency and kind of live more in connection with that understanding? Is that a thing for you? Do you struggle with it?
Well, I do. I read Paul Selig most mornings. Sometimes I'm not reading his books, but most of the time I have been for a long time. And I usually read a little bit. Yeah. And I'm, yeah. Oh, there's a coyote right out my window right now.
Oh no. Cool. You're in your little desert space. It's so peaceful.
That's so cool. It's hidden. Yeah. And so, but I usually read a little bit of it. I wanted to take a video, but we're kind of busy here. And I meditate on it. And it's really being in your knowing. So because of some of my traumas, and by the way, emotional trauma could be your mom says your feet are ugly when you're five, and that gives you enough of an emotional trauma. You never show your toes after that. Like they can be very subtle and destructive. It's important we frame the word trauma, but you know, some of my traumas get me even to this day into low self-esteem or feel, you know, my brain tries to trickle back into like being unlovable. And so, or whatever, you know, whatever version of that, like people don't like me. It's like, dude,
yeah.
It's like these insane thoughts that kind of come in. So I really meditate and I get really into doing a lot of affirmations to really just change my energy into reality by saying out loud what is real. Because if I stay quiet, my brain likes to take over and take me down these places that just aren't real. And so for me, that is a action, because it's, you know, we could talk about stuff. People love to read a book and then, but what actions are you taking as a result of that book? So it's important we take these concepts and put them into action. So reclaiming myself in the higher frequency is for me iterating who and what I truly am. You know, what Selig talks about is being in your knowing is a capital K. Like I know I'm a divine being and here with a great purpose. And when I can see myself as what I truly am, it's like the need to be loved almost goes away because you just know it's there. You know that this, I love you and you love me and we love you and I love you. It's just there. When we get in a place of knowing, there isn't needing, it just is. And that for me is reclamation.
Yeah, that is like a strong word right there for sure. And you said something, these are your words on your Instagram. You posted something that said, everything that's happened to us in the past, only we can call it forward. If we don't call it forward, then it can't be part of us. What happened in the past is in the past and only I can call it forward. So I think just being able to kind of let go of a lot of those things and like you said, speak that truth and just kind of keep stepping forward into each day. I think that's like, beautiful words directly from you.
Thank you. I can't take credit for it. I learned those concepts from actually Landmark Forum, which they were making the point that like the past is in the past. So if your past imagine you don't remember what you did at 3 o'clock last Thursday because it's in the past, it's left there. You forgot about it.
Yep.
So if there's something that happened in your past that's constantly causing you problems, it's you bringing it forward. Now it's not to say shame or guilt to put somebody down over doing that, but it's realizing that like, it would be in the past if it wasn't me bringing it forward. So how do I release it and let it go? It's very empowering. Like, again, it's that thing like we learn in the 12 steps. It circles back to us.
Absolutely.
It's here because I'm choosing it to be here.
Wow. We're more powerful than we think we are, right?
Yeah.
Wes, seriously, thank you so much for being here today. Sometimes I close off the podcast and I always ask, what's something that you want the world to know?
Thank you for having me, first of all. I love this concept. I want the world to know that, you know, no matter who you are, what you've been through, what you're going through, there's always a way to get where you want to go. Like, and I think that once we realize that we are our own biggest obstacle, and the stuff that we don't want to deal with, like we were talking about, is the stuff we most need to deal with. I just want people to know that there's like literally endless possibilities, endless, limitless possibilities. And you can truly create the life you want to create if you're just willing to go into all those places that feel uncomfortable.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Love Freak Podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe. You can also follow me on Instagram at @thelovefreak_. Don't forget, that's F-R-E-Q. Or to find out more information, you can go to www.thelovefreak.me. Look for a new episode every Tuesday.